Yes. It's Friday. You know what time it is. Nate and TD, I am Teron Davenport. I got my hitter to the left side, Nate Washington. Nate, what's going on, my guy?
TD, you got it, man. We back at it again another week, huh?
That's it, man. It's a must. Fabulous, yeah. Fridays. That's what we'll call it going forward. Man, there's a lot to talk about, but I mean, look, a couple of receivers on the air, so you know where we're going to start. We got to talk about Corey Davis, a breakout game. 7 receptions, 101 yards. His first time breaking the 100-yard receiving plateau with Ryan Tannehill as a quarterback. Talk about it.
Man, you know what, TD? The thing that, you know, I was more proud of, anything, seeing Corey perform Monday night. I think his playmaking ability has always been there, even from dating back to his rookie year and what we've seen him be able to do against the Patriots in that playoff run that we had, the short playoff run that we had. But I think the playmaking ability has always been there. That's why the Titans fan base has always been so encouraged when they see him take the field and been so disappointed at the end. It's because of the consistency. You know, maybe have one good game here or there, or maybe one good quarter here or there, but throughout the duration of a game or throughout the season, he kind of dwindles you off, you know, for whatever reason it may be. And watching him Monday night from beginning to end was dependable, accountable in his position. And to truly say, I really believe, you know, he and his third down playmaking ability Monday night really helped the Titans offense get over the hump. You know, AJ wasn't able to do what he's typically able to do. I think Derek had a solid game, but, you know, and obviously not the 100 plus yard Derek that we're all used to seeing making the big, huge splash plays. So it definitely was a situation where somebody else was going to need to step up. And here's where Corey came through, and he showed his dependability. He showed that, you know, he's definitely going to be a guy that we can rely on this year. And that definitely had me excited.
No doubt about it. And it was kind of clear that he was going to have a solid game early. And that's something that I want to go over, because I know, you know, receivers, we like to get our touches early, because you get those touches early and then that just keeps you checked in and it, you just get into a groove. And that's what happened. And then the other thing that really stood out to me was the contested catches that he made. And this is something that they worked on, ball disruption, you know, with Mike Vrabel coming over and one-on-one going over that. You know, he's catching the ball and Vrabel's swatting at it and punching it and trying to knock it out. And you see that go directly to the game. I thought that was really good. But let's focus on getting involved early. For you as a receiver, why is that so important?
You know, I'm gonna be honest with you. It's probably the time where it's the initial part of your, you know, nervousness, your butterflies, anything about it. You know, you come out in the first part of the game, you know, to get that ball in your hands, that first play or that first drive early, and to have it, you know, in that game atmosphere and be able to make a move or to be able to even run a route against a guy in a game atmosphere is totally different from practice. So you have anxiety, you have, you know, type of up and down roller coaster of emotions that you're dealing with, trying to make sure you're accountable with your assignment as well. And then here it is, you know, to have a situation where you may not get a look until mid to second quarter or maybe third quarter, those times become difficult. So to get the ball early in your hands, even if you don't touch it again for a little bit of the game, it at least gives you the mindset of knowing that you're in the game, knowing that you can be, you know, accountable at any time. Although you should always have this mentality, I still think it's important for receivers to get the ball into their hands early to boost their confidence and to go out the rest of the game and make the plays that they know they're capable of making instead of wondering when the ball is finally going to come their way.
It's really interesting how much you could do the unthinkable when you believe it, when you have that confidence. And people think that, oh, well, you know, a guy is in the league, he should have that confidence. Yeah, he has that confidence. But when you have that confidence of your quarterback going to you, it's a lot different. So that's why you see Corey Davis do what he does. You know, that's why he did what he did on on Monday night against the Broncos. And I think back to the game against the Patriots when he was going against Stephon Gilmore. I'm talking about 2018 when he dropped the buck 40 on him. That was something else that happened. The second play of the game, the deep over route, they went to him. And then two plays later, he drew a long pass interference. You have to get a guy involved early. But one of the other guys that they got involved, and I mean, I call him the slot machine, and that's Adam Humphries. And that guy, especially this week, he's going to need to step up. But what is it about Adam Humphries that makes him such a hard cover for a DB?
Well, man, you know, one of the things that I admire about Adam, obviously, is, you know, when you look at the game's physical nature and you look at the size of some of these guys, when you see your smaller guy, mm-hmm. you kind of look at him and you kind of look at him like, they not good enough. But this guy works the slot perfect. He's good in traffic. His quick route ability is outstanding. I love his short area quickness. And those are the things you have to be beneficial in the slot area. Actually, the only time that I was able to go over 1,000 yards in my career was the year that I was playing heavy in the slot area. So you have to understand, you know, not only the way that the guy may be over you, facing you, is covering you, but actually how the whole interior of the defense is going to actually be going to cover or defend the play, because you're not just running against yourself. It's a lot different from being on the outside than it is to being on the inside. And a lot of things change, you know, a lot of the timing changes. But with Adam, you can see he's comfortable there. That's home for him. He understands the nuances of an interior defense. He understands what they're going to be trying to do to stop him. He can get in what they call the honey hole every time. And I love it. It's the area of the interior of the defense that may not be, you know, wide open, but it's just enough space for you to get his pass in there. And you have to be sitting in the perfect spot. And he tends to find that perfect spot every time. So he does a good job of all of those things. And as I stated in the beginning, you know, obviously one of the things that I'm amazed at is him being, quote unquote, undersized and still being able to make the plays he makes in traffic is definitely something that we're going to need this year.
Yeah. I mean, if you saw Adam Humphries walking down Broadway, you think that he was just like an everyday person. I joked with him when I first met him. I was like, man, you look like somebody's math teacher. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just, but at the same time, you put him on that football field and he is like a crab. Sideways, front and back, he can run the same speed. So he is a tough cover. And as you said, he has a really good way of that field of to find that spot, that soft spot, as you mentioned. Now, one guy that consistently has been able to show that courage to put it in that soft spot is Ryan Tannehill. And I have to say I am really amazed at how much different he is than he was in Miami. This dude his mindset is totally different. You know, the confidence level, as we touched on earlier, but the fourth quarter comebacks. Since week 7, when he took over, no team, I'm talking about Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, Mahomes and the Chiefs, Russell Wilson, known as Captain Comeback, and the Seahawks, none of those guys have more fourth quarter comebacks than Ryan Tannehill. 5. What do you make of the poise that he's shown? Even looking at this game, they took over at the 10-yard line, their own 10, 3 minutes left. They kicked in that 4-minute offense and it didn't seem like they had any issues.
Right. I think the most impressive thing for me, Teron, is just that, you know, when you look at young guys in these positions, they always want to be the hero. They always want to be the guy that makes the correct play, makes the big play. And with Ryan, you can see that he's comfortable in his surroundings, meaning he trusts his teammates. He never puts too much on his shoulders. He's decisive in where he wants to go with the ball immediately. He trusts his reads. You know, he trusts that Arthur Smith has put him in the right position. And when it's not there, he does a good job of throwing the ball away. But he trusts the run game. And it's just one of those situations as a player, as a former player, knowing how those huddles could be at certain times and the crunches when it's, you know, when a game is on the line, you know, you can deal with some frantic guys, but then you can deal with some guys that just get it and allow the guys around them to also perform. And that's what he's doing. You know, in my opinion, I can see a guy that's comfortable and knowing that the guys in the huddle are going to perform with him the way they should be performing. And all he has to do is his job and make sure that he doesn't turn over the ball and puts them in a position to all make plays. And he does exactly that. He's decisive with the ball. He gives all the receivers an opportunity to, you know, make a catch on the ball and puts it in their area. But he also does an excellent job of feeding off the run game and allowing the tight ends to make plays and following the footsteps of Art Smith and the calls that he's making.
When I asked him about that, he said, "I try to keep a steady hand. A steady hand drives the ship." And that's pretty much what it is. And he said that the team, they have an undying belief in each other that they're going to go out and get the job done one play at a time. I don't think the mindset could get much better than that. But it's going to need to be at top shape this weekend because, yeah, A.J. Brown is not playing. He was ruled out. Mm-hmm. What? I mean, look, Corey Davis, we started out with him. Let's end with him. And C.J. Henderson, I mean, what's the deal? Do you think that's a matchup that the Titans are going to be able to take advantage of?
Well, definitely. You know, I think it's we get in these situations with the top tier corners or sort of say top tier corners. And even in if the chips are stacked against you, you have to understand that it's important that you still attack these guys, because in the moment that, you know, this defense comes in and they say, OK, well, we know that they're not going to attack CJ. We'll leave CJ alone. We can focus on other guys and strategize around that. Then it benefits them. You know, it benefits them. You can't be afraid to go out there and attack a guy just because he may be a little bit aggressive, more aggressive than, you know, the rest of the DBs in the passing game. I will say this. I was able to turn on the film today, and CJ's playing well. He played T.Y. Very well last week. He was very aggressive and confident. And knowing, you know, watching film, and I think he kind of had a bead on what the coach would try to do to him with T.Y. and his matchup in that area. But I think he was playing very confident. I think one of the things that I've seen that can be exploited and taken advantage of by the Titans with this Jags defense is they don't match. You know, he stays in one area. Mm-hmm. C.J. Henderson, he stays on one side of the field. He'll be on the right side of the offense's field, and he'll stay there. So he'll match up with whoever is on that side, whether it is man-to-man or he is playing some zone. They have definitely mixed up a lot of zone and their first down coverages. But I think, you know, it gives us an opportunity to exploit everything else. I don't think the rest of their secondary is as strong as CJ. And obviously, when you speak about one-on-one matchups, you definitely will look at him and Corey matching up in this situation. But I think it's just going to be one of those situations that it's going to be a team effort. Obviously, AJ being out is going to affect their pass game and what they're capable of doing with the number one receiver, but it's not the end all be all. I think it's an opportunity on the other end with attacking Trey Herndon. Herndon. Yeah, Trey Herndon. You know, I was watching the film on him, and you can just tell he's not as confident as CJ on the other side. He doesn't believe in his capabilities as much. And I think we can definitely exploit some situations on that other side of the field. So it's just going to be a chess match as usual. I'm sure Art Smith understands the matchup with Corey and CJ, and we'll definitely still take some shots there. But obviously, I think our benefit is going to come from other areas of the field.
There you have it. We had to go through the offense. We'll come back and talk about this defense because there are some things to go over there. Nate and TD. We'll be right back. All right. Ranubian, Pongstip up to get beat down. That's something that pretty much has happened to teams that are in low red zone against this Titans defense. I want to get into the goal line stand that has become a habit for these guys. When you look at what they're able to do, and I mean three times they kept the Broncos from a sure scoring opportunity, touchdown wise. What pops out to you when you see that? I mean, for me, I Jeffrey Simmons and what he does up front, but what is it for you that really makes this whole goal line defense go?
Man, I'm gonna be honest with you, TD, man. The very first thing that pops in my mind, is all of the work that I see Vrabel do with these guys in practice, pregame, and all of these, the work that I see him personally doing. Because I go back and I watch the film, and these guys up front, you know, a lot of goal line defenses, a lot of defensive linemen are taught to just shoot low. They create a pile, you know, make sure that the guys are stopping the run there. If you get low, you create a pile. It's going to be difficult. That's why you see a lot of running backs diving over the top, because the pile is created. A lot of defensive linemen just going low. But I turn on this film, and what I see is a lot of hat, and it's called hat in hands. These guys are exploding off the ball, maintaining the line of scrimmage, getting their hands on the blocker and shedding these guys. And it makes me reflect on the time that I see Vrabel put that pad on his chest and those guys work that very same drill.
This is
something that they've obviously been working on for quite some time. This is something that Vrabel, you know, obviously has experience in it with himself, playing in the position that he's playing in. And on the goal line, you don't just see them creating a pile, but you see them not only establishing the line of scrimmage, establishing the line of scrimmage, but reestablishing it and then coming back and shedding blockers and making plays in the backfield and in the gaps. That's different than a regular goal line defense. This is impressive. I think this is definitely going to benefit us, obviously, with our size and our different guys that we can put in different spots, as Clowney, as putting a Kevin Byard in the box, putting a safety like Vaccaro in the box, and having these guys also being able to play the run. This is going to benefit us. I was definitely impressed with that goal line stance.
And you said it. It starts with Vrabel. So what better way than to just allow Mike Vrabel himself to explain the key to these goal line stands?
Here's about the meeting of short yardage and goal line. Somebody's got to whip somebody's butt and somebody's got to make a play. That's really what it comes down to. You know, I thought Jeff and some of those guys down there were really good.
So that right there tells it. It's about whipping somebody else's butt. And that's really what it comes down to. And he mentioned Jeffrey Simmons. And that's the thing that stands out to me is you see this guy moving the man in front of him back into that backfield, and then that forces, whether it's a running play, you know, that forces the running back to have to reroute where he wants to go. He has to go sideways, and someone else could come in and make the tackle. And then even in the passing game, like you go back, I believe it was the Chargers, I want to say, but he got the penetration. He drove the man in front of him back, and then he put his hand up, and he tipped the ball. Jayon Brown intercepted it. And that is something that's going to happen this weekend, because Gardner Minshew and this Jay Gruden offense, I mean, that's what they do. It's all quick passing game. And if you go back and you watch some of that, they scheme things to make easy throws for him. And it's just all about timing and being able to throw the spots and get the ball out of the hands quickly. And that negates the pass rush. So that's why it's really important. These guys, if they see that they're not going to be able to get home, get your hands up. Muddy that passing lane for him, so that way he may have to pat the ball and reset and throw. What are your thoughts on Gardner Minshew, though? Because, I mean, you have some people saying, oh, well, this team doesn't have to get Trevor Lawrence anymore. I don't know that I believe that. I don't believe that they were ever tanking, but, I mean, I think we might need to pump the brakes on Gardner Minshew. Am I wrong?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, TD. I think he's a great benefit to a great system. They get the ball out of his hands fast. You can watch him on film and tell, you know, obviously still a young guy. You know, a lot of guys, young guys don't get, well, let me be rephrase that. A lot of veterans don't even get to their third and fourth progression of the reads. But, you know, you can just tell he's going to either hit that first or second progression and get the ball out of his hands fast. And that just goes to the offensive coordinators, you know, and the system that they have in play for him. I think it definitely benefits him and what they're asking of him. And I think he's kind of mastering their system. I don't see, obviously, the superstar or face of a franchise quality, but, you know, that would be just me. I think he's enough for what they want him to do. I think he definitely is benefiting from their system, but he's definitely playing well within their system as well. I don't think you can minimize, you know, the accomplishment that he's had, because in all honesty, I wasn't expecting this kid to do anything at all. You know, him coming in last year, even, you know, I was, you know, had an eyebrow raised, like, okay, Washington State, like, what's going on with this kid? Like, what is he possible? But he came in and he did some good things, you know, and to be honest with you, with the chips stacked against them and the outlook of their roster on paper, you know, you really don't expect them to play as good as they have been playing. But they've been in ball games, you know, they beat definitely a solid coach team last year with a veteran, not last year, but last week with a veteran quarterback. So, you know, he's doing enough within their system to benefit.
And that's the thing. That's what happened in college at Washington State. He played within the system. And he excelled within it. So definitely can't take anything from him. A coach, if you're not taking your system and tweaking it and building it to the guy that's running your system, then you're doing something wrong. So definitely shout out to Jay Gruden, a former Arena League quarterback. So you know he has a firm understanding of getting that ball out of his hands quickly. And I think what they've been able to do is – turn what everybody on paper said was trash into a competitive football team. They run the football efficiently. It's a, you know, very effective, high percentage passing game, 95% passing, dadgum. I mean, that's right. Pretty high. It's not going to happen every week. But then you look at defense, too. They're opportunistic. They create turnovers. So, look, I don't think that they're going to be 2-14 or 1-15 or anything like that. They're a competitive team, and this Titans – group, they have their hands full. So we'll see what happens. We're going to go to a break. Got to come back. We got a little treat for you guys, you know, blast from the past. We'll be right back. All right. Talking with TD. That's going to be next. But first, we're going to go to the Nate and TD show. Hey, listen. You heard the song Reminisce. Well, that's what we're going to do right now. We're going to allow my guy, Nate Washington, to reminisce with one of his former quarterbacks. That's right. We're welcoming in Matt Hasselbeck. Matt, how you doing, man?
Hey, what's up? Good to be with you guys. What's up, Nate?
Hey, my guy, Matt. What's going on, man? How you been?
I'm great, man. Excited to be with you guys. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it definitely has, man. How has that media side of it all been treating you? You see me trying to cross over here, man.
That's no surprise, Nate. You're always good at that. You know, it's good. It's just hard keeping up on everything. You know, when you're the starting quarterback and you're getting ready for a game, there's like an army of people, coaches, staff, everybody helping you prepare. You know, they hand you a notebook on Wednesday morning when you show up to go with your little notes that you have going. And you know, then it's like teamwork the whole time. On TV, on the media side, you're kind of out there on your own. You know, ESPN has a few people that help you. They send you a bunch of emails, a bunch of information. But it's basically me and my NFL Game Pass at my house just trying to figure it all out. So I think I took for granted all the support I had when I was a quarterback in the NFL.
I think I may be watching more film now, Matt, than I did when I played.
Nate, no joke. I wear those glasses that, you know, if you're staring at a computer screen all day, you know, like it protects the blue light because, I mean, really, that's the deal. I thought I watched a lot of film when I was a player. It's thank goodness for technology because it is tough. But I think my eyes are going bad on me, though.
I definitely agree with that. So let's kick it off with the football, man. As soon as TD told me we had the opportunity to talk to you this weekend, man, one of the very first things that popped in my mind when playing with you was just your approachability. You know, you were always approachable, and I definitely remember 2011 we were playing the Indianapolis Colts, and I just was running the hook all day in the slot. And we got to the play, and I had actually a seam route. And right there in the huddle, we were able to disguise, you know, one of our seams with a pump down the seam, and we scored off that play. So my question to you is, how important is it to be able to communicate with your receivers? Because I didn't always have that. But how important is it to be able to communicate with your receivers and make in-game adjustments just as players?
Yeah, well, as a quarterback, if I could just give one word to every receiver out there, just be decisive. I mean, I just remember my dad played in the NFL, and I just remember going to practices, and I'd hear a guy like Bill Parcells scream, like stop practice and scream at the offense. Receivers, we don't care what you do, just be decisive. And it's like I was a ball boy up in high school. I went to college. I played for Tom Coughlin and guys like that, played a long time in the NFL. And that's like the thing I can always hang my hat on with wide receiver quarterback relationships. Be decisive. I don't even care if you run the wrong route. Like, honestly.
Right.
Like, it never really bothered me. Like, if you have an out route and you ran a slant route, like, as long as it was obvious to me in a decisive way that you ran a slant route, like, I was good with it. And, Nate, you were really, really decisive. Maybe coming into the NFL as you did, not a first-round pick, you sort of had no choice but to run really good routes. There's a lot of guys out there that have a good 40 time and they don't run great routes, and, coaches kind of left that slack. But, Nate, you were really decisive, ran good routes, and you were the king of, I would say this, the king of asking for a double move. Like, Nate loved to say, hey, hit him with the out and up. Hey, hit him with the slant and go. Hey, hit him with the hitch and go. Like, that was Nate. But, hey, it's okay. I appreciated you hustling, man. Like, I appreciated you trying to, hit him deep.
Yes, definitely.
It's funny you mentioned that decisiveness, because that's something in camp in watching Ryan Tannehill communicate with the receivers all the way down to the guys who aren't here anymore. He said, look, I need you to be more demonstrative. I need you to be more decisive. When you watch Ryan Tannehill and how he is with the football, do you feel like decisiveness is something that's a big-time attribute of his?
I really like Ryan Tannehill. I was really happy for him last year, because I've always kind of scratched my head a little bit. Like, why did this not work in Miami? Like, why didn't it work? To put my money where my mouth is on liking him, he's actually my fantasy quarterback in the ESPN War Room League. So I'm going up against like Matthew Berry and Adam Schefter and all these experts, and I'm riding with Tannehill. But like I think the thing that I've seen him improve on is, like, he's such a smart guy. Like, when you hang out with him, you talk to him, you say to yourself, like, man, this guy could be a doctor or a lawyer or something. But there's something that Peyton Manning, guys like that have, where they're doing so much at the line of scrimmage and thinking very quickly and being very demonstrative and they're talking a lot. I don't see that in Ryan Tannehill's personality. I don't think that's a strength of his. I think a strength of his is he's a little bit of a throwback quarterback in my mind. Like, hey, let's just call these three plays. Okay, it's going to be a hard play action this way. It's going to be an empty drop back game this way. Like, keeping it simple, but just being very, very clear and focused about what we're doing offensively. And I think Adam Gase's offense, there's just like a lot going on. I don't think I would have enjoyed it either. Like, I think Peyton Manning enjoyed it, and that's about it. But I think Ryan Tannehill and Arthur Smith, I think it's like a really nice fit that they have. And I think his personality, he's probably a little bit more of an introvert than most quarterbacks. But I think it works, and I believe in him, and I think he's going to have another good year this year.
You're spot on with your assessment of the Arthur Smith and Tannehill relationship. Last year, Tannehill said that Coach Art is one of the most open and most willing to work with the quarterback coaches he's ever been with. So that tells you right there. One of the things that they do so well, I mean, we're talking about 70% completion percentage going up to 79%, is play action. As a quarterback, why is it that play action, like, can you put your finger on what makes Tannehill so much more effective as a play action passer?
Well, like, not every quarterback loves play action. It's like, you hear people say all the time, like, oh, a good hard play action fake helps the quarterback. Yeah, sometimes. I remember we went to one of those offenses when I was in Seattle, and Warren Moon, who covers our team there, he's one of the announcers of the games. I'd see him in the parking lot. We'd park next to each other, and Warren Moon would say, hey, you know, when this new staff came in with the hard play action game, your back's turned to the defense. He said, listen, you need to really work on this. I went from run and shoot to an offense where we had the hard play action, and it took me a while to adjust. And I thought, wow, okay, I never thought of that, but you're Warren Moon, so I'm going to listen. And I found it to be true. Like, my whole time, you know, my early time in my years in Seattle, I'm using my eyes, I'm dropping back, I'm moving safeties and moving linebackers, and now all of a sudden I got my back to the defense, all of a sudden a seven-step drop, and then I turn my head around and like, wait a sec, where'd everybody go? It feels very different. Not all quarterbacks are a great fit for that system. But I do think that Ryan Tannehill is a really good fit for this system. So I think personality-wise, Arthur Smith and Tannehill are really a good fit. But I just also think the skill set that Tannehill possesses, the play-action game is something he definitely thrives in. And you can't say that for every quarterback. There's some guys that are great at the two-minute drill, but in my mind, are really painfully mediocre in that seven-step drop, hard play-action game.
I totally agree with you there, Matt. I was going to actually allude to your ability. Actually, my first time able to lay eyes on you was in the Super Bowl as a rookie on the Pittsburgh Steelers team, watching you work, man. And, you know, your ability to go from a spread style offense into playing with some of the most elite backs in the league and still benefiting off of the play action pass with Sean Alexander and obviously coming to us and having Chris Johnson. How do you feel that, you know, that helped you advance and clear your routes up on the outside with your receivers? Is there a specific type of receiver that you looked for in those moments, you know, obviously off of the play action and trying to mask all of it together?
Yeah, well, just a side note on that. I thought I was coming to Tennessee. Mike Munchak sold me on this, like, power running game. You're 35 years old. We're going to have CJ2K in the backfield. And then all of a sudden, Chris Johnson's holding out, and we're in shotgun every single play. But, you know, it didn't work out that way. But you know what? I think it all has to marry together. Like, your running game has to marry to your play action game. Your formations and personnel group have to marry. Like, there's 100 different ways you can do it. But my favorite thing, and I think one of the things that I loved when I, you know, particularly the Titans and even Jacksonville in this matchup, I see people doing for wide receivers. It's so much easier for a wide receiver in my mind to get open if you line him up on the right side of the formation. And then he runs all the way over to the left side and catches the ball somewhere outside the numbers on the left side. I don't care if it's shallow or if it's deep or whatever. And the same thing, if you line up on the left side, you run all the way over to the right side, it's easier to get open. It's almost like the DBs are like, that doesn't really count. Like, you ran all the way over there. I'm not going to chase you all the way over there. Because I see a lot of these people, you know, just get so you know, just a lack of creativity. They ask their wide receivers,
correct,
hey, run up 15 yards and stop, or run up 15 yards and keep going. And that's like, that's all they got. Like, run a curl or an out. That's all you got. But the teams that get creative and ask let their receivers and tight ends even just run all the way across the field, you know, I always felt like that was the thing that I thought was the easiest. As an NFL quarterback, I always felt like when that play call came into my helmet, you know, through the headset, I would just smile and be like, okay, you know, as long as we can block for it, this is going to work.
That's great. We're here talking with Matt Hasselbeck, former NFL QB. One more question for you from me, my guy. Man, one of the things that I loved about you was your personality. Your personality, not only on the field, but in the locker room, away from the field, you know, it's just your personality in itself, man. You are always a good guy, sense of humor. I want to give the fans a little key into what type of guy you are and about your whole handicap room epidemic going on that you had dealing with when you came to us. I don't know why, but it just went on with you with the handicap room that they wanted to give you.
Hey,
the hotel room.
I found out that's a discount room. Like, you can get a discount on that room. So You know, so like, I don't know, like this is kind of how it went down. I've never told this story, but since you brought it up, you know, like on an NFL team, you go on the road, or even if it's a home game, you're at the hotel and there's police officers on the floor of the hotel. They pretend like it's so that, you know, nobody comes up to our floor, but it's really so none of us sneak out. But anyway, like, you take the whole floor. Well, like, not every room's the same. You know, some rooms are king beds, some rooms are double, two doubles or whatever. And there's always like a handicap room, which is obviously important. It's great. But for some reason, I would always get it. And when you're 6'4", the shower is never tall enough. So I could never stand up tall in the shower. And I just thought, like, wow, like someone's playing a prank on me or something like that. But I found out later that someone thought that they were giving me like a better room because it was like actually more square footage. Nate and I had this joke, like, man, I haven't taken a shower where I could stand up in the shower the whole time. So here they are. They hear the Titans were thinking they were like, you know, doing me a favor because I was the 35-year-old veteran. And every time I would just complain to Nate about it, like, wow, this is
it was hilarious. I remember you moved on to Indianapolis the next year, and I got a text from you that they had gave you the room as well.
Well, that was for different reasons. I was not the starting quarterback, and they gave Andrew Luck the suite. They gave him the nice room, and I got the different room.
I see the way that works, definitely.
Hey, but I will say, Nate, like, you know, I came down to the Tennessee Titans. I had never been to Nashville before. It was right after the NFL lockout, and I walked into that locker room like a new kid on the first day of school, and got thrown into some Steve Waterson, you know, CrossFit-type workouts in that weight room. And it was such an awesome atmosphere in that locker room of players and coaches and just really like a family atmosphere. And being in Nashville, like the city of Nashville was so incredible. We were 10 years in Seattle and 3 years in Green Bay and 3 years in Indianapolis and only 2 years in Nashville. And if you ask any one of my kids, you know, Nashville was just such an incredible experience. And it feels like we were here for 20 years. So and the players and really everybody in the city had a lot to do with it. That was a lot of fun.
And Matt,
that's awesome, man.
Before we get you out of here, because we're short on time, I wanted to just real quick get your take on Gardner Minshew and what do you think of him? Is he the guy for the Jaguars going forward after this season? What do you make of what he did? Obviously, it's one game, but well, what's your opinion?
Yeah, it's one game, but his rating, you know, it goes Lamar, Jackson, Russell Wilson, then Gardner Minshew. And after that, it's like Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, Minshew mania is a real thing, especially for a Jacksonville team that has a hard time selling tickets, has a hard time selling sponsorship and suites and all that stuff, getting on TV. I think Minshew mania is kind of a perfect fit for them, and he played outstanding. He outplayed Phillip Rivers last week. Who thought that was going to happen? You know, he's a pretty good runner. I'd say this is a dangerous team. I expect the Titans to win this division this year, but I think Jacksonville with Minshew is kind of this, like, spoiler-type team. I don't see them making the playoffs, but I see them beating playoff teams this year. What Jay Gruden and Gardner Minshew are doing, you know, they got rid of some very high-profile players, but look out. I think Minshew mania is, he's a lot better than people think. He's fundamentally sound and he's excellent at ball placement on deeper balls. So, I would say look out. I think he's a darn good player.
There you have it. That's coming from someone who's done it himself. So Matt, we appreciate you coming on. Definitely wish you the best. Look forward to checking you out on ESPN some more this year. I want to see another one of those nice sport coats, man.
I don't have a big one coming this week, but the week after, get ready. Sunday NFL countdown, okay? It's a little outside my comfort zone, guys. A little outside my comfort zone.
It's all
man,
good.
Man,
you do
I
it
appreciate
well.
You, man. Thank you very much, man. We appreciate you. And it's always been a pleasure, man. From the day I met you, man, you've always been one of my top guys. You've always been a good guy to be around. So I definitely appreciate you. And good luck on the future.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Great to be with you. See ya.
All right, we'll be right back to wrap this thing up. Something new. Stop. All right, we are back, Nate and TD. We got to put a cap on this thing, but before we get on out of here, Nate, key matchups on offense and defense. Who's your key matchup? What is your key matchup on offense?
Obviously, I'm going to go with the Corey Davis and C.J. Henderson matchup. I think Corey's ability to sustain and be consistent and dependable on Sunday is going to be needed. You know, I think it's going to be a test, obviously, but I think he has the ability to still become or play as a number one receiver, and the Titans will definitely need it.
No doubt about it. I actually will, you know, agree with you on that one. I think that's the matchup to watch. Definitely have to watch out for Josh Allen going against those tackles also, especially Dennis Kelly. We'll see what happens there. But for defense, Titans versus Jaguars, what's the defensive matchup for the Titans?
I'm going to go with probably Byard. Byard in the middle of the field is going to set the tone for it all. I think he eliminates a lot of the deep threat. And as Matt stated, you know, being able to come out in the system that Minshew has come out in, he's going to play confident. While watching him on film, he's going to take shots in holes that, you know, normal quarterbacks wouldn't take. And to have that guy eliminate that whole deep threat, I think is going to be a benefit for us. Obviously, our front seven is going to play with hats on fire and get to the quarterback. But as you stated, getting the ball out of his hands quickly is going to be something that I'm pretty sure is going to be harping on with Minshew. So to be able to eliminate the middle of the field with Kevin Byard, I think is definitely going to benefit us this week.
That's an excellent point. And as soon as you said that, I thought of DJ Shark's touchdown that he had. And then I also, as you continue to talk, I thought about the touchdown that Viska Chenault had, where they had the switch release. And these are things that require one thing more than anything else: communication. And those routes, the combos, are designed to cause confusion. If the guys aren't out there communicating, it's definitely going to lead to what? A touchdown, as it did a couple times against the Colts. So that's a great point. Byard in center field, but also Byard as a communicator. He and the guys on the outside, they have to talk. The guy in the nickel spot, Chris Jackson or whoever it may be, all of them have to talk. If you had to look at a matchup on offense for the Jaguars, what do you have? What are you looking at from the Jaguars offense?
Well, obviously, we've talked a lot about Minshew, but this running back that they have, Robinson, has obviously stepped in and done some good things as well, too. He was able to score a couple of touchdowns last week and had some impact play. So I want to see how they're able to sustain their run game against us. I don't think they'll come out into the game just putting it all on Minshew's shoulders. But they obviously know that, you know, our front seven on defense is going to be matchup issues with anyone in the NFL. But that doesn't mean you abandon the run. So to see this young kid come out and see what he's capable of doing on offense is going to be, you know, interesting. I want to see if they're able to sustain with him throughout the game.
Now, I'm going to give my own defense for the Jaguars to watch, and that's the guys at the second level. And if you go back and you watch what the Broncos did, especially 45, that guy was very, very active, and Josie Jewell as well. And they did a really good job of sealing those cutback lanes for Derrick Henry. They weren't there, so you didn't have those explosive runs. I want to see how this Jaguars team is able to do that, because – you got Joe Schobert from the Browns, a guy who had 700 tackles last year. He clearly knows how to find the football. So you put him at Mike. Now you're moving Miles Jack to Will. You got two very active guys there. And then in addition to that, you still have Leon Jacobs too. I want to see how those guys on the second level are able to keep Derrick Henry from doing what he does against the Jaguars. 498 yards in four games, including 238, a 99-yard run for a touchdown, tying Tony Dorsett for the longest ever. Obviously, he and the Jaguars, they have a bit of a history. So I think it's going to be key getting that to stop. Now that we said all that, we got to, you know, talk a little bit about something that happened this week. We got our next segment. Let me get that music, Jason. Things that make you go, hmm. I tell you what, Nate, I'm going to tell you exactly what makes me go, hmm. And in watching the Colts game, I saw that they even had the nerve to put Jacoby Brissett out there on the field for one of their plays. I'm going to tell you what makes me go, hmm. They spent, what, $16 million on Philip Rivers to come in there and save the franchise? the season opener, two interceptions, one that was just, to use a Scrabble word, egregious. Hey, come on, man. Come on. That makes me go, that Phillip Rivers is already dealing games away for the Colts. I thought the Colts were going to, you know, compete with the Titans for the title for the AFC South. But we'll see what happens.
I got a couple buddies, you know, that may run across this that I actually played against with the Colts, but we're all friends now, and I can't wait to talk to them, you know, because one of the things that they obviously were looking for in this situation was with Phillip was obviously his veteran leadership and his ability to see the game. And as you said, you know, it was just a couple of those plays throughout that game that I watched. He got caught by a trap two corner, and it was amazing, you know, to be in the year that he's in. I don't understand how he was getting deceived by those type of defenses. But it's going to be interesting to see how they move forward with that situation.
No doubt about it. On the way out, you want to give a prediction? Or what do you have going on this Sunday?
Man, you know what? I thought I was going to come close to my prediction last week with it, and I came up short. So I want to try to get a little bit on point this week. I'm going to go Titans 28 right on the nose, and I'm going to go Jags 10.
Nate is calling for a blowout. If that is the case, I'm sure they'll be boogieing on Broadway. That's the show. Appreciate each of you tuning in. Definitely enjoy the games on Sunday. Enjoy the games tomorrow, too. College football is in effect. Until then, Nate and TD coming to you every Friday at 6:00.